This is Limitless Possibility. I'm Yannick Magnan.
And I'm Luc-Olivier Dumeuble.
And our topic this week is...
This week, we'll talk about the social pressure and messaging apps.
Awesome. But first, we have some follow-up.
Oh, yes, we do. So at the end of last week's episode, we talked a little bit about the Motor Trend's Apple Car news. And those news got released a day after we recorded, which was on Yannick's birthday. I want you to remember that this happened on your birthday.
Oh, I'm so let down. Okay, so the Motor Trend thing is bullshit, okay? So what happened is that Motor Trend basically kidnapped a bunch of designers and car people who don't know anything about Apple and put them together in a room and told them draw an Apple car, and then they made a render of the Apple car, and then they made it their cover story for this month's issue, and then they said, oh, we have the exclusive on the Apple car, except it's not an exclusive on the Apple car, it's an exclusive on the Apple car that they made up, which is bullshit, and I'm very let down, and I'm going to sue Motor Trend for damages, because I thought that I was getting the best birthday present ever, and I didn't.
Yeah, to be honest though, for preparing this episode, I went on Motor Trend's website, and funny aside, I was trying to find it again, and I had to resort back to Google because it was nowhere to be found on their front page.
I guess they got embarrassed because it was such a piece of shit.
Right, and I kind of quickly started to read the Marine article about it, and it seems that they kind of did an aggregation of all of the rumors we kind of know about the Apple car, so that Apple is kind of working, that they started to create one of those teams in California, and we heard about the research lab in Germany too. So they kind of took all of the rumors we heard, put that in an article, and intertwined it with what would you do if you were to an Apple car. So they took designers, like Nick said, and they asked them this question, and then we got those designs. I think in the end, it was typical clickbait, and I don't plan, and I'm sure Yannick won't plan to do so. We don't plan to put the link in the show notes, so if you want to see how ugly their designs are, you'll have to Google it for yourself, because we won't do it.
Well, just as an aside, I don't think their designs are necessarily ugly. I think that they are realistically within the bounds of something that Apple may do, but I think that a lot of the designers that they interviewed in these articles have no clue why Apple does anything or what Apple's motivations are in their products. And it was very, very apparent from reading these things that they had no idea what they were even talking about. They were just talking as if they were designing any other car company's things, but borrowing aesthetic language from existing Apple products, which I don't think is necessarily the right way to go about it. And the other thing is, I'm just very offended by the way that they were hyping this up as if it was going to be breaking the actual story. And then it's a total letdown. Like, you don't see 9to5 Mac saying like, oh yeah, tomorrow we're going to have iOS 10. Boom. And then the next day they're like, we made up a bunch of shit we want to see in iOS 10. Like, they don't do that. And Motor Trend somehow thinks that it's a classy thing to do or a good thing to do. And I think, at the very least in the Apple community, a lot of people shunned their articles as soon as they realized what was going on.
Oh, sure. I think, though, on a different side, in the last week, we heard about Faraday Future's electric car. Did you hear about this company?
I know the name of the company. I don't know much more than that.
Good. So the company founding Faraday Future, called Lee Eco, spell L-E-E-C-O, announced their own electric car named Lee Sese. Oh my goodness.
This is a Chinese company, right?
Right.
That explains a lot of things.
And if I recall correctly, the name of this big company was Lee TV, because if I recall correctly, they're kind of nicknamed the Netflix of China. So they have their own streaming service. From what I heard, they also do TVs and computers, and now they are entering the market of electric cars.
Man, can you imagine if Netflix made an electric car? How weird that would be.
That would be pretty strange. Maybe in the end, it would just be a pod that could transport you everywhere you want, and also have a free subscription to Netflix. So that would be pretty interesting, though. To go back to the Lee Sese, this car's share some traits of the front fascia that we've seen from the Motor Trend's Apple Car article, which was surprising, though its design is way better, and it's kind of a mix of futuristic designs and what we could see from a modern luxury sedan. So I will have put two links in the show notes regarding that, the one from The Verge and the MacRumors one, which is kind of the need of the article is not regarding the car, but more what the CEO of Lee Eco said, that Apple designs are obsolete. But the main reason why I put this article in the show notes was to show more pictures of the car.
All right.
Good. So let's talk about social pressures. Yep. It's been a while since we wanted to talk about this subject. And I think what inspired me the most to kickstart it again was last week's blog post from Dave Tier of AgileBits. And this article goes in deep topic regarding why AgileBits as a company is moving away from Slack and why they are trying to break their addiction to Slack. So it gave me the idea that to talk about all of the social pressure created, and maybe the social pressure, the dynamics created by messaging app, because let's be honest, messaging apps are part of our day-to-day communication tools, especially these days.
Well, I don't want to derail the conversation too much too early, but I think that Slack is a different thing than what I would consider a messaging app. Maybe it's just that we define things differently, but I think I would consider messaging to be much more about, how do I put this? I mean, like, Slack is emulating IRC maybe a little bit too much, and I don't consider IRC to be messaging. I consider it to be chat, and those are like two separate things in my brain, and I'm not sure how people reconcile those things, but...
Okay, I'll stop you now, because the way that I want to talk about this is I kind of gathered, in my opinion, like, drawbacks, maybe problems that I face in my personal life and in my work life regarding the messaging apps and the social pressure they could create on their users. And then after that, I want to go through the list of my messaging apps that I use and kind of go through all of them and maybe go into in-depth conversation about them.
All right.
Good. So just go back a bit to my original points. Obviously, even if we'll speak about the downsides of messaging app and maybe their like dark side to it tonight, let's be honest, messaging apps brought tons of advantages to our communication, especially if we compare it to other tools that were created before them. And the one that comes to mind is email. Obviously, like I mentioned, I want to touch on more drawbacks than problems, but I'll try to stay positive. Obviously, we're in a positive...
We are known for being very positive on this show and having very positive opinions of everything and never being down on anything, ever. Especially not me.
Oh, yeah. I think in the past few episodes, we were good, especially you. So I want it to be more a kind of a introspection than complaining about those apps, and I think more the problem are more about their user than their application by themselves.
I can agree with that.
Even then, if those application kind of help to create or facilitate the creation of those issues. So what I wanted to do first, before going too much in depth into specific application, I've kind of identified three drawbacks and issues created by messaging apps in my personal and work life. And I want to kind of speak generally about them because, in my opinion, they apply to most popular app that I use or some other people will use, because I don't use all of them, hopefully. And in the second part of the show, we will go into specific issues to specific application. So let's start with number one. Instant messaging means instant reply. And what I mean by that is people have the expectation now that the second they text you or they sent you an IM, you should reply yesterday. They want the answer now. And the best example of that is the red notification. why doesn't Yannick reply to me already? I've sent him a picture or sent him a question, and I want a response now. Come on.
Dude,
and
all this. Why do you think I have so many closed tasks at work? Because I'm not listening to your IMs.
Indeed. And this first problem is, in my opinion, a mix of the pressure people put on each other while using those tools and also the feature introduced in those tools. I think the best example of that is the Facebook Messenger. And we can see all of like Chrome extension that helps you disable this feature to make sure that you can either snoop on conversation without people knowing that you read those. Because it sounds so stupid when you like take a second to think about it, that somebody is pissed because you took a minute to reply to them.
Yeah. And like
especially, go on.
I think that there are certain cases that are worse than others with regards to the specific apps. I don't know if now's the right time to jump into this, but like, for example, Hangouts will put the face of the person at the point of the conversation where they have left open. So let's say my friend didn't read the last two messages. Well, his face will be on top of the last two messages to indicate that that is how far he has gotten in the conversation. And so that's really strange. And like certain other applications will just have like red. And then if you're in a group chat with multiple people, it'll just like say red 4, and it might be 4 out of 6 or whatever. And that's another way it's indicated. And that way it's a little less of an issue because you don't know who read them. You just know that 4 out of 6 people have read the message, you know, and you can sort of generally guess who it is from patterns. But, I mean, that's something that's very common. And I think that certain apps do it better than others. Another thing that I really find questionable about this, and I know this is super privileged of me to say this, but when I read something on my Apple Watch, it doesn't actually trigger a red notification. So I may have read something and just chosen not to open it on the phone yet, but it doesn't mean that I haven't seen your message or haven't acknowledged it.
Maybe a little bit related to that, how can you, do you have a specific maybe advice or a specific like trick that you use to maybe control yourself a bit?
Control myself because, with regards to what?
Maybe not putting that pressure on others. Because even if I like can identify that it is a problem, I feel sometimes that I will be the one doing so too. Even if I hate doing when people does that to me.
I mean, I've always been very outspoken about how stuff like expecting people to be checking their emails all day in a business, for example, is unrealistic and hurts productivity more than it helps productivity. So I think that people who know me know very well that I will not be bothered if you take like 6 hours to answer me on an IM. Like if it's something where if I was going to tell you like I'm going to be late for the show and then you find out like 6 hours later that I'm late for recording, then maybe I'll be a little pissed because there's like this understanding that we're going to meet at 7 p.m. on Skype and you're not checking your messages at all.
And I already recorded a podcast with, I don't know who, but with somebody else.
Exactly. Yeah.
Was Yannick Manier.
So I think that people who know me don't necessarily have this expectation, but I think that it works the other way as well. And that's something I've wrestled with and I've tried to nudge people in the right direction when I've seen people on Twitter say like, if I send you a text message and within like 15 minutes I don't get a reply, you're not my friend anymore. And I've been like, well, wait a second. Like, there are legitimate reasons that maybe someone's battery died. Like, you use an Android phone, you must know what it's like to have your battery die.
Oh my goodness.
So clearly, I mean, the person in question was complaining about the life of their battery. So in that case, it was actually a valid point. But like there are legit reasons that people aren't necessarily going to be paying attention to their phone. If they're in a social situation with someone else and they don't want to be disengaged from that social encounter, they're not necessarily going to look at their phone the whole time. And I think that that's perfectly realistic and to be expected. But I guess people who are maybe a little bit younger than us, who have maybe grown up with all the expectation and maybe entitlement that people are going to be always on their phones, I think that's a lot more problematic, and I don't really know if there's a way out of that.
Yeah, and I think you kind of bring me to like a topic that is related to that. Is it seems to me that using your phone when you like interacting with a smartphone, when you're talking with other people in front of you, is kind of becoming kind of accepted and less rude, when it might still not be, if you see what I mean. Like you just mentioned, like people, and maybe like we'll see maybe like in 10 years and 15 years when we will see a couple of generations of people that just use those services from like 2 years old to 99 years old, and see what are their expectation and maybe their level of rudeness, if they assume that a person is rude if they use their phone when they're talking to each other or not.
I mean, like, to a certain degree, you can look at cultures that have had mobile data and mobile and texting for longer than North America has. I think that if you go to Korea or you go to Japan, I think that the social norms with regards to phone use are very, very different than what they are here. I've been to meetups with people in Japan where everybody was on their phone or PSP or whatever, and it was just a part of how they do stuff. And I mean, like, in that case, I didn't really mind it because I know that that's sort of the norm for the people I hang out with. But it's going to vary a lot from culture to culture and from groups of friends and even with age and all of that stuff. And society moves on, I guess.
I guess. Which I think brings me to a point that is kind of related, because like assuming instant reply might also mean that the person that that is expecting this instant reply is trying to convey a wrong tone or emotion while using this service. And that would be the biggest problem I ran into since I started using instant messaging application, is people can assume your tone while reading what you sent to them. Can assume a specific tone, even if it was not that. They could assume that you were trying to be mean with them when your intent is only to just be kind of funny, but a little bit online. And this is where I had the most problem with either friends or colleagues. And it still boggles my mind how, or personally, sometimes it happened to me that you read something and it seems benign, but then your brain just starts ramping and assuming that it was the meanest comment on earth, just because you don't have this context that the nonverbal part of the communication will give you if the person was face to face.
Yeah, like I've answered sometimes, like some of my friends on Twitter will ask questions and I'll give them the answer and they'll think that I'm answering it in a passive aggressive way, and I'm actually not. I'm just saying something and they're reading it in a passive aggressive way. And I think that that's just a problem of text communication as a whole, and you see certain messaging applications trying to circumvent that. WeChat in China is very big on voice messages, and the reason, of course, being that text input in Chinese is fucking insane. So they are big on voice messages over there, to the point where you see people walking around with like a weird hand pose on their phone so that they can hold the record button while holding it up to their head. It's very strange. But they do that. And the other thing, of course, is stickers, which has gotten fairly popular with regards to Line and KakaoTalk in Korea. And I think that sometimes just adding a sticker in there to try and guide the tone in the right direction is a good thing to do. Of course, you can always screw up and use the wrong sticker. That happens sometimes. But it's just to add a little bit of nonverbal hint as to what you're trying to say from time to time. And I guess emoji to a certain degree can be used for that as well.
I was about to just bring up emojis. And I think emojis will be the best to just do so. Because compared to stickers from multiple applications, I would say that emojis, the description that there has been put into them, maybe we won't go into the too much description of the description, but so much of it has been put by this committee that just managed the emoji standard, that when a face, like an emotion face, has been described, the description is what, 5 of 10 words long, because it said it is trying to describe a specific emotion. And I think, I would say Apple's and YouTube, Twitter's implementation of the emoji feels to me the closest to what was the real emotion. So for example, if they say like kind of snarky face while being unsure, like the emoji will show a face of somebody being snarky while being unsure of his snarkiness, which in my opinion brings what the nonverbal, I wouldn't say bring all of it, but it's bringing the most of what an emoji can do to the nonverbal communication part.
Yeah, and even then, there's, because those descriptions are sort of hidden away in like Unicode tables somewhere. I mean, you can get access to them on the Mac, but on iOS, it's a little trickier to try and get access to them. A lot of people are not entirely sure what a certain emoji is, and so some people will actually use it in differing contexts. Like, for example, the praying hands emoji. A lot of people also interpret that as a high five, which when you look at it, you're like, yeah, I guess if you're not a religious person, you might think that that's a high five, but that's not really what it is. So you can still have misunderstandings with emoji, even with very precise descriptions, because again, a lot of people aren't even aware of the descriptions. And like, there is some stuff that is just really weird, arcane stuff that got imported from when Japan invented emoji, and it just wound up in the standard because that's what Japan had. And you have really weird shit like the name tag emoji, which a lot of people think is either some kind of fire symbol or a piece of tofu that's on fire.
Oh, wow. I need to take a look at this one.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Good. This last point would be the one that will link those two ones with all of what we have to say about specific application. And in my opinion, managing messaging application has become a part-time job on itself. And what I mean by that is, I'm sure Yannick, you run into those issues. I'm sure tons of our listeners has run into this issue where you have multiple conversation with the same people or person on different services.
Yes, this is increasingly becoming common at work.
And then you have those common questions that raise up at least twice or thrice a day. An example of that would be, where did I send this picture to this person? Or, I don't remember where I put the Mototrends Apple Car article. Did I send it to Yannick online, on Twitter DMs, on Twitter, on Skype? Like, you start to have those questions, and then it becomes a 5-minute search on your phone. So you go first, okay, I know that I talked to this person around like a couple of days ago on Facebook Messenger. So go in Facebook Messenger. Hopefully some of those apps might have UI that makes it easier to search links, photos, conversation. But if not, you just end up going from application A, scroll back. Oh no, it's too late. It's like a month ago. Go to application B, scroll again. Application C. And then 5 minutes later, you still haven't found it and you just rage quit.
Yeah. Early on in the iPhone's life, like around the time the App Store came out, I was really looking forward to basically having all of the legacy IM services implode on themselves. And they pretty much did. I mean, AOL Instant Messenger, it's still around, but nobody uses it. MSN Messenger is dead. Yahoo Messenger,
it's now Skype, let's be honest.
Yeah, it became, well, it got merged into Skype, but yeah. Yahoo Messenger, I have no idea. ICQ, I have no idea. Surely someone is using them, but not really anyone that you know, really. Probably old people, let's be honest. And like, I was looking forward for like, there was going to be one big messaging service that was going to consume them all. And some people speculated that that would be SMS. And I, of course, hate SMS because I hate A, phone numbers, and I, B, hate phone plans related to SMS. I think that they are outrageously priced for the amount of data that they are passing. Instead, what we should have is cheaper data pricing that actually allows people to have decent data plans. And I still think that we are far behind on other countries on that front.
But that topic would be a series of episodes.
Yeah, it's a complicated problem, especially with countries the size of the United States and Canada. It's easy to look at other countries that have way better pricing, but they have much smaller countries and networks to manage, which is a whole other problem. SMS sort of was popular before smartphones. Now smartphones are sort of making a dent in SMS in North America. Ironically enough, everywhere that was like 100% SMS for years before it was popular over here in Europe and in Asia, they've all moved on to smartphone apps of various kinds. And what we've gotten instead is sort of another group of popular messaging apps, and which ones are popular will depend on where you are in the world. For example, if you're in Japan, it's going to be Line. If you're in Korea, it's going to be KakaoTalk. If you're going to be in the United States, it's going to be Facebook Messenger. There are
WhatsApp in Europe, and
yeah, I'm not really familiar with the other ones,
right? But I think we're still back to what AIM was. MSN Messenger was.
Yeah, like, we're all back into these silos, these proprietary silos for instant messaging. And the problem is now they've all got wacky proprietary protocols and there's no multi-service client you can use for them like you could rely on in the desktop days where you had stuff like Adium and Trillium that could help you consolidate all of your instant messages into one application. And most of the time the app was shitty because it was trying to do the least common denominator for everything and it was not a very good experience, but at least you could sort of try to manage the problem that way. Whereas now you can't manage that problem that way. Everything is in its own app. There's very little with regards to cross-pollination of information to make it easier to find conversations from similar people. And like WebOS had built-in functionality to tie third-party services and applications to the main contacts. And you don't really have that on iOS where you can't just go to someone's contact card and say, show me every conversation I've had with this person on every social network over the last week or something, which would be a really useful feature to have, a lot more useful than stuff that got introduced in iOS 9, like Proactive, for example. But we're not there.
Oh, and exactly. And I think everything you just said is thrown at your face the second you're trying to have a conversation with three different people or more. They're talking to you at the same time, and each of those person are in their own silos. One is in Facebook Messenger, the other one is in iMessage, and the third one is maybe online or Slack or whatever. And then you jump from one app to the other to the one the other to the and you see where I'm going with this. And then you just realize that, what, 10 years ago, we had apps like you just mentioned that would try to converge those silos. And then it reminds me that the main feature I wanted on the fucking MSN Messenger version on the Mac is to have video chat, and it never came, or it did came, but it was shitty, and in the end, I never used it. But I really wanted it, because what they try to do is always lowest common denominator, and now we cannot have that anymore. Like, even apps like Google Hangout and Facebook Messenger are shutting down their standard server that could use those third-party clients to, yes, bring new feature to the user, but let's be honest, the main reason they do so is to block you in the silo and make sure you stay there.
Yeah, and what's particularly infuriating to me as a, well, I'm becoming less and less of a Mac user as it's become apparent over the past few weeks, but there's no good desktop client for Google Hangouts. There's no good desktop client for Facebook Messenger. There are web pages, but that's not a desktop client. That's a web page. And I know that Google and Facebook believe heavily in the web as platforms for applications. Well, it's too bad because they're subpar applications because they're on the web. But, I mean, that's another topic. But the good news is that the desktop is less and less relevant these days, so it's not really that big of a problem.
You're right. And I think now we can start finally being more honest about all of the apps we use. So as homework, and hopefully you did follow the rule.
That's not homework. That's like 3 seconds of looking on my home screen.
Sure, sure. But at least you didn't do like me and kind of skip the rule or something like that. But I ask you which messaging app do you use, whether if it's for work or for your personal life, we don't care. And I think knowing you quite a lot, I think our list will kind of merge a bit, but it will be interesting to see what will be the main demographic you're trying to you're trying to address in your social life with those messaging apps?
Well, I think the parts of our list that will look the same will look similar because we have an overlap in friends, of course, and we use the services our friends use because that's sort of how social messaging works. If you don't have friends on the network, there's no real point in installing the app. But I think that our weighted usage of those applications is wildly different.
Oh, yeah. And I think this is where the interesting part will come. Good. So I'll go through the 9 applications.
9?
That I use. Yes.
Wow. That's a 9. Lot.
And maybe you'll maybe some separation. I think I've separated iMessage and SMS. So you can go down.
I don't use either of those.
Sure. But there could be something to say that those could be merged. But to me, they are different services, different limitations. So they are separate.
Makes sense.
Also, you'll see they target different people. So let's go through the list. 1, iMessage. 2, SMS. 3, Facebook Messenger. 4, HipChat. 5, Slack. Line, Twitter DMs, Skype, and lastly, Snapchat.
Oh, you count Snapchat as a messaging app?
Yes, Snapchat as a messaging feature now.
Yeah, I still don't consider that to be messaging.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. That's where I wanted us to debate about those lists too.
Okay, should I go ahead and say my list?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so 1 is Line, and the rest of these are not going to be ordered because I can't be bothered. So there's Messenger, there's Hangouts, there is the PlayStation Messages app, and there is Skype.
Oh, your list is short compared to mine.
Yeah, it is, and I still think it's too many.
Hello. When I list them all, I just realize how much apps that I use now. And let me go to the list again while mentioning the specific social circle that I'm like targeting with those apps. I would say that iMessage is my close friends. SMS is random people that don't have iPhones. Facebook Messenger is friends in general. So maybe friends that I won't speak, but that I will speak rarely. Like it's not on a daily basis that we'll chat. HipChat is obviously for work. Slack has been the Apple dev community way of talking to each other. Also, we use it between CocoaEd's Montreal hosts. Line has been my only way to talk to Yannick for the last few years because Yannick loves Line. And in the end, I think I'll come back to that, but I started to love Line even more too.
Yay!
But still, we'll go back about why Yannick forces me to use Line and in the past also forced me to use AIM. But let's continue. 7, which was Twitter DMs, is also same as Slack. So it's a mix of either kind of managing the community and people kind of talking about CocoaEd's or the Apple Dev community as a whole. Obviously, Skype is either to... I would be honest, I really rarely use Skype as an instant messaging application, more of a video chat and audio chat application. We do use it to record this podcast, and obviously it's nice to use when you want to see friends in person. And oh crap, I need to add another one now.
FaceTime?
But yes. Yes, but I would put FaceTime as the same circle as iMessage. So it's really like when I use FaceTime, it's for close friends. But yeah, to go back to Skype, it's either to have a video chat with close friend with friends or family or other people, because Skype is more available to the general population compared to FaceTime, because without going too much into the data discussion of carriers and all, FaceTime is kind of a hit or miss with iPhone users here in Quebec and Canada, because a lot of the caps and all. And lastly, Snapchat, which is kind of funny because Yannick is kind of right. The instant messaging feature was added quite recently.
It's not that recently. It was a year or two ago.
Yeah, you're right about the timeline, but compared to the other apps, it's kind of, it felt that they wanted to add it to make sure that you stay in the silo. But in a way, it sounds really weird to say, but in a way, Snapchat is a different way of messaging each other about our lives. It's obviously self-centered because it's pictures and it's like sharing what I'm currently like seeing or experiencing in the world with close friends and the world as a whole. So I would say it's kind of a mix of friends in general and close friends.
So the reason I don't see it as messaging so much is, I mean, like, yes, it has a messaging component, and it's arguable that the fact that you could send snaps to specific people early on in the product was some form of messaging. It was visual messaging, but it was still messaging. But the appeal of Snapchat to me is really more in the stories product than it is in the messaging product. And I think that that's a much more compelling product to me than anything else, especially now that Instagram is changing their feed, so it's algorithmic now. And as someone who was using Instagram to document my trips to Japan and whatnot for my family, and they could just follow me there and see what I was up to that day, if the feed becomes algorithmic and they follow more people than just me, they can completely miss out on what I post. And that makes it a bad choice for documenting my trips. So a better choice might be to use Snapchat stories, where every day they could go and click on my name and automatically get a quick slideshow of what I've been up to over the last 24 hours. And I think that's a really smart thing to do. The one thing I sort of don't like about Snapchat stories, of course, is there's no back catalog, but that's sort of the whole point of Snapchat, is everything's temporary and ephemeral. And I certainly see why people like Snapchat more now that I've played around with stories a little bit. But I mean, that's the extent to which I understand Snapchat, really.
No, and I think it's really targeted too. Like, they know their market, they target it well, and I think, like, especially in people that are younger than us, which is surprising, but people that are in the teens right now, it's like focused to them. They use it that much. I was reading recently, I think it was a Verge article, and the guy was interviewing his little sister and her friends.
It was a BuzzFeed.
Oh, BuzzFeed. Sorry about that. But I'm sure we'll be able to put it in the show notes. But still, the guy at some point, like, was talking to his sister and her friends, and one of the girls were mentioning that, oh yeah, we knew a girl, like, her parents was always mad at her because she spends 60 gig per month on her fucking iPhone. I was like, what? 60 gig? And the guy, like, textually said, 60 gig. Are you certain you're adding too much zeros there? No, I'm sure 60 gig on your iPhone.
Yeah, but to me, like, Snapchat, I think, it's hard to say because, again, I'm really not in the target demographic for Snapchat, but it feels like what Twitter should have been. I think it answers the original goal of Twitter better than Twitter did, where it was trying to be, what are you doing right now? And share that with your friends. And I think that Snapchat arguably does a much better job of that, of sticking to that mission statement, than Twitter does today, where Twitter is just sort of confused constantly about what it's trying to be. And Snapchat is very much, this is what we are. And yeah, you're probably not in our target demographic, but that's fine. There are other things for you. And that's sort of how I feel about it. But yeah, it doesn't really qualify as messaging to me.
Okay. But you're totally right about the fact that it's kind of feels like the initial goal of Twitter, because the main reason I mostly use it with my brother and is a girlfriend, and the only thing we send is just like random shit that happens in our life, and also we'll all assume it's boring. That's fine. Like, at some point my brother is just bored and will send me a funny picture of him with the cat, and I'm just like, hey, at least now that we both move out of the house, it's kind of a funny way and it's a nice way to just share that we just are still quote-unquote together or sharing our lives together still.
Yeah.
Even if my brother is just far away and I am far away from him too. But we see, like, it's kind of a way. It's a different way. And to me, it feels, from all of the apps we mentioned, it feels to me that it's kind of it's just different. And even if I hate the app so much, don't get me started on the UX of this application, please. But it just feels to me that it's just different, and it knows that it's different, and it doesn't fear its differentness.
Yep, that sounds pretty accurate. Do you want to go through more of your apps, or should I go through mine?
Good. Let's go through yours a bit, because we talked a bit about this. A little bit too long about Snapchat, but that's fine.
Yeah, okay. So my primary messaging application is Line. Yeah, so this is a big point of contention between me and Nikodipi because I forced him to use it. At a certain point, I think it was like 3 or 4 years ago, I basically decided I'm giving up on desktop IM entirely, and I dumped AOL Instant Messenger, I dumped MSN Messenger, I dumped Jabber and Google Talk and whatever, and I basically went all in on Line, and my goal was to only use Line. And as we've mentioned a little earlier, I sort of have had to deviate from that for certain things. But for the most part, I am spending 99% of my messaging time in Line, which is really good for me. I don't have much headaches managing what apps I'm talking to people in because the people I care most about are all in Line anyway. So that's not really an issue. I'm going through my Line friends right now. I have 49 friends I talk to online, which I imagine is a lot more than like maybe the two you have.
Okay, I'll go through mine just for the fun of it. Okay. Line, where are you, my friend? Okay, you are. So right now, the open chat I have is you, Taylor Swift, Line Canada, my boyfriend that used the Line app for 2 seconds.
I remember that.
And that's about it.
Yeah, I know that they have, two of those are official accounts, so they don't really count.
Right, and I know that they have your brother, a colleague, and a common friend, too.
Okay, but not people you talk to a whole lot on there.
Oh, no. I only talk to you on that.
Okay, so yeah, mine is wildly different because I have a lot of friends in Japan, and I have a lot of friends who have friends in Japan or are fans of what is popular in Japan, and Line is the number one messaging app in Japan. In fact, it's sort of become a little bit more relevant recently because of the Kumamoto earthquakes that took place last two weeks ago?
Yeah, it's 2 weeks ago, yeah. If I remember correctly.
Basically, Line was born out of the March 11th earthquakes in 2011 that there was in Japan because the entire country was basically struggling to get connectivity to talk to other people, and Line was basically born out of Naver Japan, which Naver is a big Korean internet company you've probably never heard of, but it's basically the Google of Korea, and they had a Japanese division, and they basically said, we're going to start our own messaging apps that is going to provide telephony, and we are really optimizing this so that in the case of major disasters we can provide quick communication to everyone, because Wi-Fi and like non-cellular connections were easier to find during that time than actual cell connections, so they couldn't rely on cell infrastructure to actually communicate from one family to another and whatnot. So that's where Line was born out of, and 2 weeks ago during the Kumamoto earthquakes, they basically flipped the switch and said, everybody on Line gets basically free calls within Japan for this much time, so you can make sure to tell your family you're safe or whatever, which is really great of them. And it's a social network. Well, it's a messaging app that I respect a whole lot because their business model doesn't revolve around advertising. And I think that that is increasingly rare. And I am just very wary of companies that try to do things that favor advertisers to their users, or try to mine people's private communications for the benefit of advertisers. And I think the Line is much more aligned with the user than it is with advertisers. That said, you can market online. And in fact, you can do so very well. If you're a big brand, you can pay $70,000 to Line to create sticker packs that are going to be distributed for free to any of the Line users that follow your account. And that is a great way that people market. People see cute stickers from Coca-Cola. They go and follow the Coca-Cola page so they can get the free stickers. And you have no obligation once you have the stickers to actually keep following that page. So you can just block them and move along with your day. But if you keep following Coca-Cola, then maybe during the summer when it's really hot, you're going to get a coupon that says, hey, use this QR code somewhere and get free Coke or something, or two for the price of one Coke or something like that. And it's just a way to get people on board to your to their marketing messages and basically get customer loyalty that way. And I think that's a much more respectable way of doing things than just mining as much information as possible for tracking and advertisers. Which is more the Facebook approach of things, and I'm becoming increasingly wary of those approaches.
Yeah, and you kind of touch what I love so much about Line is, at first, it was yet again kind of another weird app, and the iOS client is not that great. It's becoming better, but you've seen that it's kind of not mobile first still.
What? It's the opposite. It's too mobile first because it doesn't do anything on desktop, really. It's like the desktop app is terrible.
Yeah, but the way I've seen something mobile first is I still don't understand why you can only have one iPhone, one tablet.
Okay, that's very much tied to Asian app design choices. It's something very cultural, and yeah, I don't expect a lot of people to understand the reasoning behind it, but it's very common over there for apps to be like that. In fact, a lot of the things I suspect you dislike about the app are just general trends in Asian app design.
Oh, maybe not. I don't know. Like, it just feels that the apps, and you see, like, the chat functionality of Line is just a portal to all of our other services, because they have tons of games that use Line branding. They also have shops, if I recall correctly, or they do have, like, kind of a, like, Line Pay, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, Line Pay is available here as well.
Right. So, like, the Line messaging app is just their own silo to get you in and all of their stuff. But you're right, what I like is the way that the second you explain me how Line works and is its business model, it fits so more with the messaging app compared to what is like a messaging based advertising app, quote unquote. Like, a best example of that is Facebook. You mentioned it, and I think, but Google does it too with Hangouts, but it's a little bit more subtle, to be honest. But you still get the feeling that Facebook is using your data, and yes, like all of those bots that they are announced recently to help you book a flight or order Burger King or get the news from the new Wall Street Journal. I don't remember which publication, but they have kind of a bot that
it was CNN.
CNN, okay, but I know there was a journal too.
Oh, I don't know.
Maybe the New York Times. Huh. Doesn't care.
Like, but for people who are not used to Asian messaging apps, the bots functionality that Microsoft and Facebook are trying to push very, very hard is what basically some crazy executive in the United States thinks that WeChat is like, except it's not what WeChat is like, except they just never used WeChat, so they have no idea what they're talking about. But I think in North America, there's this huge wave of people seeing messaging apps taking over the world in Asia, and they're trying to emulate that success without understanding why it's successful there and why it might not be successful here. And there's a really, really good article I'm going to put in the show notes from one of the designers at WeChat, who is actually American, but he works on a Chinese WeChat product. And he explains in all of the ways that the bot effort is misguided completely, because what's valuable about bots and about official accounts in other cultures like China, like Japan, like Korea, is that in their cases, it's a much simpler way of interacting with whatever they're dealing with, whether it's a pizza company or a utility company or your cell phone carrier or whatever. It's an easier way of interacting with them than with apps. And the value doesn't come from typing out sentences to a computer that is then going to use artificial intelligence to try to determine what you're trying to tell them. That seems like a horrible, horrible waste of effort to try and get computers to decipher that, when we already invented the user interface, the graphical user interface, to present options to users so that they don't have to type shit out. It's like, it's very, very confusing what Microsoft and Facebook are trying to achieve by making bots capable of parsing English sentences that you are meant to type into a messaging app instead of just tapping a button.
Yeah, but that's strange too. But at the same time, I could see in like semi-long-term future, they could just ask a bot, like, I want this, either with your voice or by tapping it. I would say maybe with your voice would be way better, but
yeah, I think the voice is a much better idea. But I think where people are getting most misguided is they're seeing all of these Asian chat apps have tons of functionality built into a chat, and dumb North American executive reads that and says, oh, well, we need to parse English sentences. No, that's not what they're doing. And if you go and use those bots, go to Asian countries where they actually have a use and not just use them from here where there's no point, you will realize that this is much, much more than what they're offering, and that what they're offering is pathetic and a waste of time and engineering effort, to be honest. But we got completely derailed. I have other messaging apps on my phone.
Yeah. And I would like to also make a point after you go through your list.
Okay. So next up on the list, Facebook Messenger. I have basically like one family person and your boyfriend that I talk to on Facebook Messenger. That's more or less what it is. Google Hangouts I use with...
Wait a sec, but you do agree with me that Facebook Messenger is kind of the place to be if you want to talk with friends. Like, just put it this way, like, friends we hang out with at school or around town, that would be the place to go.
I mean, like, yeah, but I don't have those friends, so that's not really...
sure, okay.
Next up is Hangouts, where I talk to my friends who have Android phones. Literally, that is the only people I talk to on Hangouts, is people with Android phones.
Yeah, mine is SMS, yours is Hangout.
Yeah, well, I have maybe more techie friends than you do with Android phones, I guess. I don't know.
Sure, and also it's either some friends or random people.
Yeah.
I do have a funny story regarding Hangouts. I think I haven't used it in a while, and every time I want to talk with Shannon, which only uses Hangout as far as I know, it's always, Yannick, ask Shannon this.
Yeah, that's more or less what we do. Maybe he's listening to this.
Right. What's next on the list now?
Actually, before I go into that, I just want to talk a little bit about Hangouts. The Hangouts app is pretty terrible on iOS. It has been pretty terrible since pretty much they've rebranded to Hangouts. Luca Devito doesn't know this because every time he has to use Hangouts, he asks me to use it. But every time I open Hangouts, it asks me if I want to rate the app and if I want to complete the tutorial to use Hangouts. I've been using Hangouts ever since it's been called Hangouts, so I know how to use the app. So please stop shoving your fucking tutorial in my throat every single time.
And let's be honest. The only time I use Hangouts is via the Gmail web interface. So
yeah, I try not to look at my email, so I go to hangouts.google.com when I have to deal with it on the desktop. But otherwise, I just say screw that and use it on mobile. Next up on my list was PlayStation Messages. And
that was a strange one.
Yeah. So I play a lot of Destiny, and I have a clan in Destiny where we are basically a group of people who play together on a regular basis. And text entry on the PS4 is not ideal. It is much better than what it was on the PS3 and on the PSP and all that stuff, but it's still not ideal. So I can just type much faster on the iPhone than I can on PS4. And that is why it's there, because we have a group chat and we all just basically say, hey, do you want to do Prison of Elders tonight? And it's like, yeah, whatever. Woo. The problem is PlayStation Messages app. Well, actually, all of the PlayStation apps are basically complete garbage. The old PlayStation app, which used to contain all of the PlayStation functionality before it was fragmented out into, unbundled into other apps, it worked, but it wasn't great. PlayStation Messages launched, and it mostly didn't work, which is sort of a problem. So you had to quit the app from Springboard to actually refresh the chat, because it was just frozen to whatever the chat was after it was first loaded. You couldn't actually reload the chat at all. And that actually made it hard to know if the message you'd sent actually got sent. So for a really, really long time, during the terrible days of that app, I used my Vita instead for messaging, because it was less of a pain since the app actually works there. But now one of my Vitas is dead, and the other one is on another account, so I can't rely on that anymore. So I have the PlayStation Messages app on my phone. It's still terrible. It takes something like 1.5 minutes to actually reload the chat every time I launch the app, and I don't know why, because usually there's only one or two new messages.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
But I use it because I type faster there, and even when I'm on my PS4, I'll use it because I tap faster there, and I'll look at the notifications now. With the latest PlayStation update, you actually see a preview of the message in the notification instead of just seeing, hey, X person sent you a message. So it's actually more useful. So I can just look at the notifications and answer on my phone instead of waiting for the app to refresh. This probably sounds like hell, and that's because it is. But I deal with what I've been given. And last up is Skype. So Skype and Hangouts basically have this weird symbiosis where my coworkers, Ben and Shannon, are both on Hangouts and on Skype. And we chat together on Skype during the day at work. And then when we get home, we switch to Hangouts.
I can see why.
And the reason for that is we are logged in to Skype at work on our personal accounts, and we don't want our personal bullshit to wind up in our work computers. So we switch networks. And it
But it's still your personal Skype account that you're using at work.
Yeah.
Compared to what I would like to have, like, right now, I do have a HipChat account, but it's for my work. It's not my personal HipChat account.
Yeah. But
okay.
We basically just, I mean, there is no, we could have actually used HipChat because we are Atlassian clients and whatnot. So it would have been another Atlassian service to put into our bag. But we just use Skype because originally it was just Ben and Shannon working there and they're best friends anyway. So whatever, like it was easier for them to just use Skype. Then I came along and we had a remote worker join into the project a little earlier. So we needed to get people outside of the building into the chat because it wasn't actually that big of a deal. Like if we want to chat in when we're at work, we can just look to the side and they're right there. So we don't really chat that much during the day. It's more to send links and stuff or SQL scripts or whatever. But since we had to bring people from the outside, well, chat became more important then. I could probably live without Skype on my phone now because it's only really being used while I'm at work, whereas before that was less of a given. But like, I just keep it there so that now that it's not winter anymore, so it's not really going to happen. But if there's a freak snowstorm and I'm going to be like 20 minutes late to work, well, I can at least notify them while I'm in the bus and they'll see it at work. But that's more or less how I use Skype and Hangouts with the same people. Yeah.
Hmm. Oh, that's interesting because a feature that I like about having to use only, for example, HipChat for work purposes, meaning that I don't have any personal stuff on HipChat on a different account, is if I go on vacation, I just log out of HipChat everywhere and my job is done.
Yep.
And that's the best way to just turn off work from yourself. Compared to email where you cannot just say mute or just turn it off.
Yeah, you can. Just don't have mail notifications at all. That's why I do.
Oh, sure. I don't have any mail notification. It's just to remove the badge, it's either I do remove the badge configuration or just go delete the account because when I go to mail, it will refresh and blah, blah, blah. So,
I guess.
Yeah. So I'm quite surprised that you still like, maybe less, it's less of a problem now, but I'm still surprised that Keanu using a person, kind of quote unquote personal instant messaging service for work and this separation between work and personal kind of.
Well, I mean, like, honestly, all I do on Skype is either work or this podcast. I don't really worry about my personal stuff winding up on Skype because I don't use Skype for personal stuff. So it's like not really a problem. It's basically a work account with the exception of people this I podcast with.
Good. Good. I think the last point I wanted to touch before we just do the closing remarks is the feeling I have with all of the apps I use. Like I mentioned those 3 points, but if I speak technically about the apps, there's always something I hate about the apps. Always. Either we go through iMessage, Facebook, HipChat, and go through the list, I can name you a things that rubs me the wrong way. And most of them is a big one. And I still find that those app services and those messaging services, even if they bring new feature like sending files, chat, a video chat, audio chat, quick previews of links, which you don't like, Enik, but I do love. Like, it still feels to me that they don't have their mobile experience or their desktop experience quite good or quite what it should be. especially for a messaging application that is created in the recent years. There's always something of gripes, either if one of them is you have multiple groups that you want to switch from back and forth, or one is too noisy because it's Facebook and it sends you stupid notification. It still feels to me that if I were to fix the three points, the three drawbacks that are more on the human side, I will still see pain points by those applications, because as apps, they go from not so great to really bad to okay. And I would like to maybe at some point be able to just like use one service and be able to say, I use this service because it ticks all of the right box. It has a good iOS client. It has good syncing between clients. It's like I can share files and blah, blah, blah. And then I will be happy.
Yeah, the problem is that'll never exist.
Sadly. Oh, I can still hope, though. I can still hope.
Yeah.
Hey, yet again, we end on a positive note.
Oh, we can go downhill if you want.
No. Let's end here then.
All right. So you can find the show notes for this podcast at limitlesspossibility.net/39, or you can find all previous episodes of this podcast at limitlesspossibility.net. You can find the podcast on Twitter at limipo_podcast. That's LIMIPO_podcast on Twitter. You can find me on Twitter at Sakurina. That's SAKURINA. And you can find Lucanouche at
Lucanouche. That's LUCCONOUCHE.
And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks.